Today's shiur is Masecht Chulin Daf Kuf. We will begin on Daf Tzadik Tesamim Beis. The bottom line, get out Noshesh and his Bashel. We had learned in the Mishnah that if one Girah Nosha falls into a pot with other Girah Noshes, so the halacha the Mishnah taught us was that if it's noising tam, if it gives tam to the other Girah Noshes, then it's Aser, otherwise it's Mutter. Ask the Gemara, Filvat Baruba, why can't we just rely on Rav? And the way most Rishonim explain the Gemara is that we have two things working in our favor. One is that it's a min b'minoi, that we have one gid falling in between other gidim, and it's a yavesh b'yavesh. It's not something that's a liquid. It's something solid. And the halacha is, those that know Hilchus Taruvis, that if you have a min b'mina, yavesh b'yavesh, it's batel b'roiv. And therefore the Gemara's question is, why do we look at nois and tam? It should be enough for roiv. Most Rishonim go on to explain that the roiv that our Gemara is saying should be adequate is a roiv of 2 to 1. It doesn't have to be a roiv of 60 to 1. Any roiv would be adequate. As I said, certainly, if it's a situation of lach b'lach, that the mixture is not two solids, but rather it's a mixture of something that's a lach, there the halachi is you need shishim. A machloikis rishonim, if it's min b'she'enoi minoi, but it's a yavish b'yavish. Most rishonim are of the opinion, when it's min b'she'enoi minoi, even though it's yavish b'yavish, there two shishim is required. But our Gemara is still very much relevant because our Gemara's question is here it has everything working in its favor. It's a min b'minoi with a yavesh b'yavesh where the halach is that a simple roiv is enough. Here we have a very interesting machlokes rishonim. As the Gemara is teaching us, roiv is adequate. So if you will unless, as we'll see soon, why here we don't rely on roiv. So the rishonim debate, what is the halacha? Let's think about our case. If one piece of meat that's not kosher falls into two other pieces of meat that are kosher, the halacha is it's batel b'roiv. So now, are you allowed to eat all three pieces of meat? Are you allowed to eat only two pieces of meat? What's the halacha? Rashi says that you have to take one piece of meat and throw it out. Even though you don't know which is the piece of meat that's kosher, which is the meat that's not kosher, you can't eat all three pieces of meat when you know that one is a non-kosher piece of meat. Tosfos takes a different approach. Tosfos says you can't have one individual eating all three pieces of meat, because if that one individual is eating all three pieces of meat, he will have eaten something that's not kosher. But if it's two individuals, between the two of them, they can eat all three pieces of meat. The Rashba says one individual can eat all three pieces of meat. He just says they can't eat them all at the same time. But if he eats each piece of meat separately, it's fine. And the Ra is the most lenient. He says if our Gemara is teaching us that we could rely on Rav, then Rav teaches us that it's fine and you can eat all three pieces of meat. What is the basis of this Machloikus Rishonim? So Rabbi Chanan explains that the basis of this Machloikus Rishonim is really, why are we lenient when we have a Rav? There's two ways of looking at it. One is because the Torah says, Achir Rabim Lahatis. Achram Lahat says that whenever you have a question, we follow the Rav. Another explanation is because we say, called the Parish, Miruba Parish. We could always assume that the piece we have here at Taruvis, and the piece that we're taking is the kosher piece. So, if we're going to rely on Achram Lahatis, what does Achram Lahatis tell us? That everything becomes kosher. That Torah says when you follow the Rav. Called the Parish, Miruba Parish, doesn't necessarily say that. Interesting question that there's another machlokes achronim over is you have three pieces of meat. And our Gemara is clearly teaching us that when you have three pieces of meat, two kosher, one not kosher, we follow the roif. What would be, I have here three pieces of meat. I obviously don't know which is the kosher and which is the not kosher, because if I knew which one is the not kosher, I could just remove it. I don't know which is the not kosher, but one of the pieces of meat is a large piece of meat, and the other two pieces of meat are smaller pieces of meat. do we still apply the concept of roiv? Because you have mostly kosher meat. Or do we not apply the concept of roiv? Why do we not apply the concept of roiv? Because this one piece of meat is larger than those two other pieces of meat. So therefore, roiv shouldn't be, teach us that we should be makel. So the Shach says we could still apply the concept of roiv. And he says a beautiful explanation why we apply the concept of roiv. He says, what is the source, as I just said, that we always follow roiv? Because the Torah says, Achri Rabim Lahatos. In what context does the Torah say Achri Rabim Lahatos? In the context of a Bezdin. If there's a Bezdin, there's a case brought in front of them, we take a vote. Now, do we start measuring that this Dayan is a greater Talmud Chochem than this Dayan? No. Every Dayan has a vote. So every piece is equal to one piece, and we follow Roiv. There are Achronim that disagree with the Shach. One more interesting question. We know that an Esrig that grows without a Pitim, or if the Pitim fell off when the Esrig was still on the tree, is a kosher Esrig. An Esrig that had a Pitim after it was taken off the tree and it falls off is a Pasul Esrig. So the question that came up that the Pesukim can discuss is that somebody has a box of Esrigim. All of the Esrigim are Esrigim that don't have a Pitim because they're kosher Esrigim without a Pitim. And into that box falls an Esrig that Pitim fell off, which is a Pasul Esrig. So we say Bittel Baroiv or not. Why? Because till now, when have we applied the concept of the Bittel Baroiv? Our Gemara. The Torah tells us, you're not allowed to eat Gira Nasha. But the Torah says that if the Gira Nasha is Bittel in Kashra Gidin, it's Mutter, Ach Rabim Lahatas. But Ach Rabim Lahatas can't take something which is Pasul and make it Kashra. The Gira Nasha, the Torah says don't eat it. It didn't make it kosher. The Torah never said the Gira Nasha is kosher. The Torah said that if you have a teruvus and the right circumstances, you're allowed to eat it. But here we want to take an esrig, we want to do a mitzvah with this esrig. And the Torah gives requirements how to fulfill the mitzvah of esrig. To take a pasul esrig and the roiv should turn a pasul esrig into kosher, maybe that roiv doesn't have that ability. Or maybe that's what roiv does. It may be connected to the machloikas arishayim that I said earlier, if you're allowed to eat all the pieces of meat. According to the raw, probably you could be more lenient. According to the other rishayim, you may have to be more machma. So back to how we started our shir. We started the shir that when the gira nasha fell into the other gira nashas, why doesn't it become bottle beroiv? Answers the Gemara Bar Yoshani. And here we begin a very important concept. And actually that's going to be the main subject of the first part of today's shir Be'ezer Hashem. Even though there are cases and there are halacha bittel, under certain circumstances, we don't apply the concept of bittel. Now the Gemara spoke about beria. We're going to soon have another case that we don't say bittel by Dovish Shadakar, Chaticha Ruil Eskabit. And the fundamental concept why we don't say it is because it's a Dovah Choshev. And something that's Choshev, something that's significant, does not become bottle. Machloikas Rishonim, if this halacha that a beria doesn't become bottle, if this halacha that a beria doesn't become bottle is a din d'oraisa or is a din d'rabbanan. There are rayas in both directions. The raya that a beria is not bottle mid'oraisa is the fact that we know that a namala, small ant, it doesn't have the shir kazayis, which is always the shir achila, you're not allowed to eat. So we see that a beria is choshim in the raisa. What's the raya that a beria is only a din de rabbanan? Going back to our Bezdin. You have a member of the Bezdin, a very great Talmud Chacham. And his opinion is in the minority. Yet, it's ignored. We follow the roiv. So we see, it's certainly equal to a dava choshim. It's certainly equal to a beria. And yet, the halacha is that it doesn't, that his position becomes bottle. And therefore, it's a raya that a beria is only a din d'rabbanan. So we paskin, and it's relevant la'loch l'maisa, that a beria, the fact that a beria is not bottle is only mid'rabbanan. Mid'raisa, even a beria would be bottle. The nafkamina would be, if you have a suffix, since it's only d'rabbanan, we could go l'kula. Tosfos quotes an interesting Yerushalmi that says that even though we're saying that a beria doesn't become bottle, so that when we say that burial doesn't become bottle, means that the halacha of bittel b'shishim doesn't apply by burial. But he quotes to Yerushalmi that if it's the elef, really the exact number is 960 to 1, it does become bottle. We don't paskin that way. We paskin that a burial is not bottle no matter what the ratio is. However, what is very important to discuss is what's considered a burial. What conditions must be met for something to be considered a burial? And the Paiskim essentially say there have to be 4 conditions. The reason the Paiskim are so anxious to define what the conditions are, besides that we need to know how to paskin, because there are really a number of difficulties. One is we find that a chita, if you have a chita of truma, it becomes bottle. We learned you need a ratio 100 to 1, but why isn't the chita considered a burial? Chalev comes from an animal, yet chalev we know becomes bottle. A nevela comes from an animal, yet a nevela becomes bottle. So when do we say burial and when don't we say burial? So as I said, the Paiskim give essentially 4 conditions. One condition they say is it has to be a davar shalem. It has to be an entire whole item. The gid anasha, it's an entire gid. The next condition is it has to come from a living thing. So that right away answers the question of a chita. A chita doesn't come from a living thing. The next condition is it has to be that both when you divide it and when it's whole, it's not called the same thing. Let me explain what I mean. A gid anasha, when you have a whole gid anasha, people call it a gid anasha. When you have a slice of the gid anasha, people don't call it a gid anasha, they call it a slice of gid. But chalev, whether you have all of the chalev of an organ or of the animal, or just part of it, it has the same name, chalev. And the fourth condition is that it has to be something that's usur from when it was created. A gid anasha, as we learned, and we will actually learn it again, from the moment the animal is created is usur. Whereas a nevela, an animal isn't born a nevela, it's only a nevela after it dies without shechita. And therefore, all of these things are not considered a burial. One more interesting point that the Paiskim can make is that even though we're learning now that a burial is not bottle, there is a case, there are a number of exceptions to the rule. One exception to the rule is that when a burial is not whole anymore, most relevant case is regarding Toloim, the mollus. If you have a worm or an ant or any creature, it's not whole anymore. That means it's nimuach, it's crushed. Or if it's missing an avrish and a shamat luyba, it's not considered a burial. The Gemara discusses what happens if it's missing an aver, she'en and a shamat luyba. Let's say you have a fly that's missing a wing. So a wing is not an avrish and a shamat luyba. Is that considered that it's no longer a burial or not? Since, say the Paiskim, as we've been saying, this is a situation of the whole din of burial is Rabbanon, we could be Mekel, if it's missing any part of it, it's bottle. Another point that the Paiskim make is if the burial is not visible, which is a very common situation, that you may have something in the food, but it's not visible to the eye, it becomes bottle. Why? So the Paiskim gives 2 explanations. One explanation is, because lo nitna Torah l'malachei asharis, the Torah wasn't given to Malachim. HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us the eyes that we have. And what we could see. What we can't see, we don't have to see. That's one pshat. But another pshat, and it becomes very understandable when we're learning our Gemara today, is that what's the reason that a berry is not bottled? How have we been explaining it? Because a berry is a davar chashuv, it's considered something significant. Something that you can't see cannot be considered significant. And therefore, if it's not visible to the eye, it's certainly not in the category of burial that should not become bottle. We furthermore learned the Mishnah, if a piece of nevela or a piece of dag tamei got mixed up with others, we have to see if it's nois and tam. Ask the Gemara the same question, v'ti batel beruba. Why don't we say that it becomes batel beroiv? So the Gemara relates to a Mishnah Masechta Arla. The Mishnah Masechta Arla discusses a case where somebody had chavilei tilsim. He had a bundle of vegetables, And those vegetables were klayim. And the question is, do they become batel or not? Now the shear of klayim is bittles 200 to 1. So you had that ratio. And the Mishnah quotes a machlokes, Rameir and the Chachamim, if it becomes batel. The Chachamim say there are only six, or according to Rabbi Akiva, seven vegetables, fruits, that are very choshev, that never become batel. Rameir is much more machmer. And he says that Chavilei Tilson don't become batel. And there's a machlokes there, and how to understand the opinion of Rameir. And the Gemara picks up on that machlokes. According to one opinion, Ramey's opinion is, as long as this item is usually sold by the piece, even though it's not always sold by the piece, sometimes let's say it's sold by the pound or by the lot, that's enough that it should be considered a double choshev and it doesn't become bottle. According to the Mamdom that says that it has to be something that's always sold by the piece. And then and only then does it not become bottle. Under all other circumstances, it becomes bottle. So in our case, yes, perhaps, typically, pieces of meat, pieces of fish are sold by the piece. But sometimes they're not. And the question therefore is, why in our Mishnah don't they become bottle beroyv? Ma'ik lemeimer teaches us the Gemara, Shani chaticha, however, royal scab of Neorchim. A new concept of a chaticha, royal scab, it's something that's significant that you would serve to a guest, doesn't become bottle. This piece of meat you wouldn't serve to a guest, it's not kosher. So why is it considered chaticha, royal scab? So I saw a number of explanations. One is you would serve it to a guest. You wouldn't serve it to your Jewish guest, but you'd serve it to your non-Jewish guest. He doesn't have to eat kosher food. Another pshat is, there's nothing wrong with the piece of meat. There's isser, but the meat is good meat. That keeps in the category of chaticha royal eskabit. Another pshat that we should say is that when we speak about chaticha royal eskabit, we don't have to be speaking about the piece of meat in front of me. The point is, the chaticha royal eskabit, another piece of meat that looked like this you would eat, it will be considered something you would serve to your guest. That's why it's considered chaticha royal eskabit. And our Gemara is teaching us now that something that's in the category of a chaticha royal eskabit doesn't become bottle. Machloikas Rishonim, when the Gemara now is teaching us that a chaticha royal eskabit doesn't become bottle, according to whose opinion is the Gemara going? It's certainly going according to the opinion of Rameya. The Rameya said that the Chavilei Tilson don't become bottle, teaches us our Gemara, that similarly, anything that's a chaticha royal eskabit doesn't become bottle. Now we have a machlokes rishonim. What will the Chachamim say? Because as I said a moment ago, in quoting the Mishnah Masechta Arla, Rashi quotes the Mishnah as well. The Mishnah Masechta Arla says that the Rabbanim say that you only have those six or seven fruits, vegetables that don't become bottle. Would the Rabbanim agree that chaticha royal eskabit is equal to those six, seven items mentioned there, and they don't become bottle? That is the opinion of most rishonim. Other Rishonim say no. If we see the Rabbanan have this very limited view of what doesn't become bottle, and they only mention in that mission those six, seven items, similarly they won't just say anything that's a chaticha royal eskabit doesn't become bottle, and they may not agree to this halacha. So now the Gemara asks a question. As we've been explaining, if you look at the concept behind Beria, and you look at the concept behind chaticha royal eskabit, they're really the same concept. The concept is that it's something significant, and something significant doesn't become bottle. So the question the Gemara asks is, our Mishnah is essentially teaching us two examples of the same concept, Beria and Chaticha Ruil Eskabit. And therefore the Gemara's question is, why does the Mishnah have to give us these two examples? As says the Gemara Vitzricha. The Ashmin and Gid, Mishun the Beria. A Gid is a Beria. And a Beria, I would say, indeed never becomes bottle. Av Chaticha, if it's only a piece, it maybe is not considered significant to love, and maybe it does become bottled. V'yesh min chaticha, whoever has covered l'fnei orchim. This is something you'll serve guests. Av a gid, it may be a barrier, but nobody's going to just give a little piece of gid. You'll have a chosh for guests, you're not going to give them a really small portion. Eimaloi, maybe even though it's a barrier, it ought to become bottled. Tzricha, that's what the Mishnah had to teach us both cases. Says the Gemara, Dorish Rabba Bachana, Chatichas nevela v'shodak tamei. If you have a piece of nevela or a piece of dak tamei, the Rishonim discuss why the Gemara had to give two examples of nevela and a dak tamei, and they explain a nevela has the factor, the characteristic that even though now it's not kosher, but it comes from something that's kosher. A dak tamei was never kosher. On the other hand, as we discussed at the end of the previous year, the tzir, the source of a dak tamei, many Rishonim hold is only also the Rabbanan, whereas every aspect of nevela is also medaraisa. Says Rabbi Babachana, chatichas nevela v'shal dak tamei ein neseres achetitn tam beroyta bekipa bechatichas, which means that if a piece of nevela or a piece of fish falls into your pot, says Rabbi Babachana, look at all of the ingredients in your pot, and if you have take all of the ingredients in your pot and it's bottled b'shishim, you're fine. Rav was very upset with this psak. And to publicize his displeasure, he made sure that there should be somebody who can make an announcement. Everybody should know that I disagree. He's on the wrong track. And anyone who ever learned Hilchas Taruvus knows that Chaticha Nasas Nevela, which we now touch, and we'll learn again in Mitzvah Shem later in the parak, is one of the most fundamental halachas of Hilchas Taruvus. In the yeshiva world, it's called Chanan. Chaticha Nasas Nevela. What does Chaticha Nasas Nevela mean? Rashi gives two examples. Tosfos is only satisfied with one of those examples, so we'll learn with the example that everybody's comfortable with. We have here a pot of kosher meat. We have a pot of kosher meat. And on laying on the top of the pot is one piece of kosher meat. On top of that piece of meat falls a non-kosher piece of meat. And the tam of that non-kosher meat falls onto that kosher meat. So now the question that we need to understand is how do we look at that kosher meat? Do we say that that piece of kosher meat, because everything is very identifiable here, do we say that that piece of kosher meat is a kosher piece of meat? It just has in it a blia of non-kosher meat. But that's only a certain portion of it. So if we could somehow figure out how much it was, we'd be fine. Or do we say no? Once it was bileya, once it absorbed the tam of non-kosher, it becomes a piece of non-kosher. Teaches us the Gemara, teaches us Rav, that we say the concept of Chanan. Chaticha nas nevela. And that piece of kosher meat that touched the non-kosher meat, that was beleya from the non-kosher meat, is considered a shtick, is considered a piece of non-kosher. And when we want, and if this would now fall in, if somebody would come now and stir this pot that had this piece of meat that was beleya from the non-kosher meat, we need to have shishim, not against the beleya in that meat. You have to have shishim against that whole piece of meat. Because that whole piece of meat is viewed as non-kosher. And therefore, Rav says, the Rav Babachana, this is Machlok Shushanim, how to understand Rav's displeasure with Rav Babachana. Rav Babachana ignored the concept of Chaticha Nasas Nevela, says Rav. You can't ignore it. Or, the other thing that bothered Rav is that here we have a min b'minoy, one piece of meat with another piece of meat. And we've been learning in our parak, we learned it many other times, that it is the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda, the min b'minoy leibatel. So how did Rabbi Babachana say that you just take this piece of meat, and it's together with all the other pieces of meat in the pot, and the other ingredients in the pot, and you could say you have shishim? How can you say that? Chana, you have a problem min b'minoy, one piece of meat with another piece of meat. So we have two reasons, as we'll delve into the Gemara, Be'ezer Hashem, why Rav was dissatisfied with Rav Babachana's psak. Kivin shenosatam b'chaticha, when the osadig piece of meat touched the kosher piece of meat, that kosher piece of meat, chaticha atze nasas nevela, v'yseres kol chatichas kulan, and now when it is stirred together with all the other pieces of meat in that pot, we look at that piece of meat as a piece of non-kosher meat, and it doesn't become bottle. as we just said, Rav holds like Rav Yehuda, is never bottle. Omle Rasafra Labaya. So Rasafra commented to Abaya. Michti. In understanding what Rav just said, Michti, Rav command Omre Lashmaitse. Rav, according to whom did he say this? Rav Yehuda. He obviously follows the opinion of Yehuda. Dama Mimba Minoi Leibotl. He obviously feels that we say Mimba Minoi is Leibotl. So ask the Gemara, my area Kanos and Tam, what's the reason that the problem is because it gave Tam? I feel a Kalainos and Tam Nami. Even, why do we have to come up with this situation where the kosher meat, where the non-kosher meat touched the kosher meat? Say a simple story. A non-kosher piece of meat fell into a pot with kosher meat, and that kosher meat, and now you have Mimba Minoi, kosher meat with not kosher meat, is Mimba Minoi, and if Rav follows the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda, Mimba Minoi doesn't become bottle. Why do we have to add this layer of complication of Chaticha Nasus Mevela? Answers the Gemara, Amalei, I feel Maya Kli Nosan Tam, I feel Kli Nosan Tam Nami, even if it didn't give tam, it should be the same halacha. Answers the Gemara, b'shekadim silkai. Here we're referring to a situation where the first piece of non-kosher meat was removed. So that's not a factor. What is a factor? The piece of meat that absorbed tam. So all the Rishonim have a very big problem here. We learned that what does chaticha nasas nevela mean? That when you have a piece of kosher meat and a piece of non-kosher meat touching each other, so the kosher meat becomes also because of Chanan. We also have learned that Rav is of the opinion that Mimba Minoi Loi Batel. So let's try to understand the Gemara, asked the Rishonim. The Gemara says that what happened in Rav's case? You had the non-kosher meat. What was the Gemara just teretz? The teretz the Gemara just offered. You had the non-kosher meat and the kosher meat that touched each other. The non-kosher meat is no longer here. You only have the kosher meat. But the Rav is teaching us that that kosher meat is considered non-kosher because absorbed tam from the non-kosher meat. What does it have to absorb tam? It's Mimba Minoi. And Rav holds Mimba Minoi is not bottle. Very hard question. Rishonim are very troubled with this question. So there are three answers that the Rishonim offer. One answer that the Rishonim offer, simplest teretz, is the Gemara doesn't mean that it gave tam. The Gemara means as soon as they touched. It's difficult because that's not what the Gemara says. The Gemara says, kinosim tam. Rabbeinu Tam says, what happened here was that it only touched for a second. It only touched for a second. Why would be the halacha, says the Rabbeinu Tam, when you had kosher meat and non-kosher meat touching each other for a split second? They're hot, but it's for a split second. The halacha is that even if we hold Chanan, and even if we hold Mimba Minoi Loi Batel, there we won't say Chaticha Nasas Nevela. Why? So the Rishonim, because it's only for a second. And there's a machlokes how to understand what Rabbeinu Tam means. Does Rabbeinu Tam mean that since it's only a mashahu, so in halacha mashahu is not considered something significant? That's one way of understanding the Gemara. Or the other way of understanding is, what is the lumdus? This is what Rabbi Aaron Kotler explains the Gemara beautifully. What is the lumdus of Chanan? The lumdus of Chanan is that this non-kosher taste, this non-tam, kosher tam, goes into the kosher meat. It's very much related to a concept that we discussed of tam kicker. But for tam kicker to work, you have to have what should spread. If it was for a second, there was no opportunity for that tam to spread into the non-kosher, into the kosher meat. And therefore we won't say Chanan, and therefore we won't say Mimba Minoi Loi Batel. And that's why the Gemara said it was there not long enough. That's Rabbeinu Tam's approach. Rabbeinu Ephraim has a third approach. Tosfos quotes Rabbeinu Ephraim. That he says the entire halacha of Chaticha Nasas Nevela, a very famous Rabbeinu Ephraim, is only by Bas B'Cholof. Why? Because Bas B'Cholof, as we're going to learn, is a very bechiddish. Meat by itself is kosher meat. The milk by itself is kosher milk. Yet the Torah says if you cook them together, we know it's a very serious issur. It's going to be the primary issue of the next parak. That's where the Torah told us a chiddush of chaticha nasas nevela. In all other areas, we don't automatically say chaticha nasas nevela. Only when actually gave tam. And that's what the Gemara says, ki nasan tam. That's this teretz. Rav Amar, Rav says a different way of understanding. Because again, what is the Gemara's question? Why do we have to come on to this case where the, why do Rav have to add the layer where the kosher meat, the non-kosher meat touched the kosher meat, and then it became bought, and then we're worried? Why don't we just say that the non-kosher meat fell into the pot of kosher meat, and we should say, chaticha nasas nevela, that mimba mina is like bottle. So he says it's referring to such a situation. I feel a light time silkai. Have a min v'min v'min of a dover acha. The kum min v'min of a dover acha selekas mina kemish eina v'she'ena mina ravel of mevatli. Instead of mouthful. Which means as follows. Even though Rav is teaching us min v'mina is loy batal, the Gemara is teaching us there's an exception to the rule. What would be the halacha if you had in a pat kosher meat, non-kosher meat, and then everything else, the gravy and the soup and the spices. So you have min v'minoi and min v'eina minoi. So teaches us Rava Chiddush that even Rabbi Huda, who is of the opinion that says min v'minoi is not bottle, that's only when you have only min v'minoi. But when we have min u'minoi, kosher meat, non-kosher meat, v'she'eina minoi, the rest of the ingredients, the halacha tells us that we should take to the side the kosher meat. Ignore it. And now we just have to look at the meat, the non-kosher meat, and the other ingredients. So maybe if I didn't have the non, that piece of meat here, the kosher meat that became mussar, I would have shishim. That's why Rav had to add that layer. Continues the Mishnah. Noig b'tahara, v'ein noig b'tameyim. The Mishnah teaches us the halacha of giranosha only applies by kosher animals, not by non-kosher animals. And the Mefarshim asked the question, this halacha that we're learning now is a very fundamental halacha in Hilchis Giranosha. So if we review the Mishnayos of our Perek, asked the Mefarshim, we have a very interesting situation. First the Mishnah, the Perek began teaching us Hilchis Giranosha, that's the name of the Perek. Then the Mishnah digressed to teach us other halachas, and now we're sort of coming back to Giranosha. Shouldn't the Mishnah have first finished all of the halachas of Giranosha, and then come to these other halachas, explain the Mefarshim, that is very much part of the sugyas that we've been learning of this perek, is the concept of Isser Chalal Isser. And as we're going to see in our Gemara, there's really two ways of understanding this din of Noig B'Tahar V'Ein and Noig B'Tameya. One is because it's Ein Isser Chalal Isser, so it's already a non-kosher animal, so Giranosha is not Chal. And the other explanation is, as the Gemara is going to teach us in tomorrow's shir, that a Giranosha is a pasuk that teaches us only by meat that we could eat is there a din of Giranosha. In order to avoid making that error and understanding that the real reason of the Tanakam is because of Issa Chalal Isser, he puts this Mishnah in the middle of all the other Mishnahs that discuss Issa Chalal Isser to help us understand that the Tanakam's opinion is Ein Issa Chalal Isser. Rabbi Yudaimer Abit Meir. Yudah says, it applies even by non-kosher animals. And the Mara will explain Rabbi Yehuda's opinion in a moment. I'm Rabbi Yehuda. And Rabbi Yehuda makes a point. What's the raya? Because he's, and the Gemara explains this, but just to say with words, the Giranosha was already also from the time of Yaakov Avinu. So I saw that the Achroinim asked an interesting question. Why does the Gemara say that the Giranosha was also from Bnei Yaakov? The Giranosha was also from Yaakov. Yaakov was allowed to eat the Giranosha. The Bnei Yaakov. The Yaakov already was. Why does the Mishnah talk about the Bnei Yaakov? So the Eish Avram says, a chiddush nifla ad ma'oid. He says, Yaakov was allowed to eat the Giranosha. The Bnei Yaakov weren't allowed to eat the Giranosha. So the question is obvious. Why Yaakov yes and his children not? So I saw the Michtz Yitzchak gives a beautiful, beautiful explanation. He says, we all know, we discussed it, the Gadot Gemara, that battle that took place when Yaakov's Giranosha was displaced represents, we all learned, a much deeper battle. The battle of the Yetzer Hara, the battle of bad against good. And as we learned, the Malach wasn't able to prevail over Yaakov Avinu. But what does the Pasuk say? V'yiga b'kaf yerech Yaakov. What does V'yiga b'kaf yerech Yaakov mean? He didn't touch Yaakov It touched his children. The Yetzirah said, you're too tough of an opponent. Your children, I'll be able to get. And in fact, he goes very deep. He says, if we look at that entire episode, the Yetzirah was already telling Yaakov what is going to be his tactics with Yaakov's children. What do we learn? He ofka imoy. And the Gemara said, what does be ofka mean? Avak. What does avak mean? When we learned the Gemara, we said avak means the avak averas. Things that people don't even consider an avera. The Yetzirah said, you know how I'm going to get your children? I'm going to get them to do avak averas. This, it's not an avera. And once I trap them, I could get them. Then he also said, the gidim. We just finished learning in yesterday's shir, and that's the halacha the Gemara says. Ein begidim benois and tam. He said to Yaakov, you know how I'm going to be able to trap your children? I'm not going to come and tell them that the mitzvahs that make sense, they shouldn't fulfill. How can I tell them that you're allowed to steal? How can I tell them that you're allowed to disrespect the parent? I'm going to tell them the chukim that we have in the Torah. How could you follow the chukim? They don't make any explanation. The gidin. Ain't the gidin benois and tam. You, I know I couldn't get. But your children I'm going to get. That's why the Mishnah says, B'nai Yaakov, not Yaakov. B'nai Yaakov nesigir anasha. V'dayim b'hem b'teres le'em. B'nai Yaakov were allowed to eat non-kosher animals. It didn't happen until later. Amalai. So, that's why the Gemara will explain how this is connected. The Isra of Gir Anosha applies not only to kosher animals, but even to non-kosher animals. Amalai. B'sinai Nemar. Actually, the halacha was said b'sinai. Elo shenichtav m'koymai. It was taught, the Torah mentions it in the place where the episode happened. But what is pshat with the Gir Anosha? When did the Gir Anosha really become Asur? It only became Asur when we got the Torah, and it's one of the Taryag mitzvahs. So the obvious question that Mepharshim ask is why confuse us? Why confuse us and tell us the parasha of Gir Anosha in Bereishis, where Rabbi Yehuda could come and make the assumption that that's a raya, that the Gir Anosha is already also from when they were Bnei Noach? Isn't it a raya? Isn't that the Torah should have only mentioned the din of Gir Anosha as it mentions all the other halachas only after Har Sinai, only after Kabbalah Satorah? So one answer is very much connected to what we just said. There's so many lessons to be learned from that story that the Torah felt it necessary to mention the story. Another halacha is that the Gir Anosha is osur michayim. We're going to say that the Gir Anosha is already osur from a live animal. How do we know? Because Yaakovin was alive when his Gir Anosha was displaced. So that's why we had to mention the story to see that this is the halacha of the Gir Anosha. Furthermore, I said this previously, I just want to repeat it because this is the real sugya. When the Mishnah speaks about Bnei Yaakov Nesar, the Mar doesn't mean that in the time of until Matan Torah, even Goyim weren't allowed to eat Gir Anosha. The Gemara means that only Bnei Yaakov until Matan Torah didn't eat Gir Anosha. Although the Rishonim say even Goyim weren't allowed to eat the Gir Anosha until Matan Torah, and according to Rabbanan, the Matan Torah, we got separated and we became Osir and they remain Mutar. So obviously, Rabbi Huda's opinion is Issachal al Issar. The animal's already a non-kosher animal, and yet it's also Osir to eat the Gir Anosha. Ask the Gemara, is that true? The Sovereign Yehuda, is it indeed the opinion of Yehuda that Issachal al Issar? Vatanya, we learned in the Braisa, Yehuda Oimer, Yochel Tei Nevelus Oif Tamimit Godim Beis Abliya. We've learned that the Torah says a very unique halacha. That if somebody eats a Nevelus Oif Tahar, a kosher bird that wasn't slaughtered properly, there's a special type of tumma. It's Matam Begodim Beis Abliya. It's only Matam a person as long when that food is in the person's throat, and when it's in his throat, it's metamim on a very serious tumah, even the clothing that he wears. That the same halacha should apply not only by a kosher bird, but even by a non-kosher bird. Tamaloymer, the veil of a treifa la yochel tamaba. Misha sur mishum bal toichel nevela. Only such a bird that may not be eaten because it's non-kosher, because it wasn't slaughtered properly, has this halacha of tuma. Yotzeh sheini sur mishum bal toichel nevela el mishum bal toichel tameya. What is Rabbi Yehuda saying? This bird is already non-kosher. It's a non-kosher bird. So it's already osur because it's a tameya. So the Isra of Nevela cannot be chal on it. So here too, asked the Gemara, how could this animal, which is already osur because it's non-kosher, have another Isra of Giranosha? V'chi temer. And if you'll say, Kesavar ein begidim menasin tam, as we spoke about a few moments ago, that he will hold that the Gidim don't have a tam. And that's why, when is there an Isser to eat non-kosher birds, non-kosher animals? Only if it has din of basar. When does something have a rule of basar? If it has a normal taste. But if it doesn't have a normal taste, it's not considered basar. And therefore, Rabbi Yehuda is going to be of the opinion that this Gid Hanosha of the non-kosher animal, you're not also because it's a non-kosher animal, because it's not meat, it doesn't have any taste. Or like we explained in the previous year, even if it has a taste, the halacha doesn't consider it a significant taste. It's a tam kolish, we said. And therefore, there's only issa gid and no issa tameya, and that's why we could understand Rabbi Yehuda's opinion in the Mishnah, because there is no issue here of issa chalal isser. Because when is there an issue of issa chalal isser? If it's also because it's non-kosher, and now I'm putting on top of it the Nisa Giranosha. But here I'm saying since it doesn't have a tam, it doesn't have a din of non-kosher, and it only has the Issa Giranosha. And if you'll suggest an understanding of Rabbi Yehuda's opinion, that he holds Kusava Ein Begidim Menasin Tam, or B'Tamei, and therefore when we talk about a non-kosher animal, Issa Gid Ika, there's only an Issa Gid, Issa Tumaleka, says the Gemara, can you attribute such an opinion to Rabbi Yehuda? V'Sar Rabbi Yehuda, Ein Begidim Nice and Tam. Can you say that Yud is the man that holds that Gidim don't have a Tam? For Tanya, the Bryce expressly says, Yud Mechayiv Shtayim, one because it's non-kosher, and one because it's Giranosha. But if we're saying Ein Begidim Nice and Tam, why Yechayiv for non-kosher? It must be because Rabbi Yehuda holds Yesh Begidim Nice and Tam. But if it's Yesh Begidim Nice and Tam, so it's already also because it's non-kosher. So how does the Issa of Gid chal on it? Rav Shimon Poiter answers the Gemara in understanding Rabbi Yehuda's opinion. He is of the opinion that Gidim have tam. The Kesavar, Noig Bishlil. We're talking about a case of a fetus, of a non-kosher animal. The Issa Gid, Visatod Bahadikadi Kasi. They both come when that fetus was formed. When does it become tummy? When it was created. When is the gid there? When it's created. So even if we're going to say ein issa chalal isser, when do we say ein issa chalal isser? When they don't come together, one after the other. So once something is usser, it can't become another isser, cannot be chal on it. Why ein issa chalal isser? We'll discuss a little more tomorrow. But just to remember, what we learned in yeshiva. In yeshiva they said, the reason ain issa chalal isser is because you can't fill up a cup that's already full. So if it's already usser, you can't make it more usser. But if the two isurim come simultaneously, that's fine. Here the issa tumah and the issa good come together. Ask the Gemara, how could you say that that's the understanding of Yehuda? Let's go back to the beginning of this parak. But Tanan, we learned in our parak, Noi B'Shlil, Rav Yehuda Amar Ein Noi B'Shlil, V'Chel B'Mutar. Answers the Gemara, Hani Mili Gav Tahayra D'Rechman Amar Kol B'Behemet Techelu. That the fetus is mutar because of the mother. Ava B'Tumah, Rav Yehuda will agree that the Issa Gid does apply, and it comes at the exact same time. Ask the Gemara, so why are we saying that the rule of Ein Issa Chalal Issa wouldn't apply here? Because the two Issurim come at the same moment. Ask the Gemara, or me matzitz am the tavai b'hadei adadi kasu. Can we explain the Mishnah that's referring to a case where they both came together, that the Issa Tumah and this is a good come together? Going back to Gemara that we learned at the beginning of the parak, with Tanan, the Mishnah says that Leila Tumas Anoz Megaleach, Anoz is now come into contact with Tumah, and if he does, he has to cut his hair and start from scratch. And the Mishnah says there, in Masech the Nazir, Alameis Vel Kazayis Meneis. And as soon as you learn the Mishnah Vakashna, we have a difficulty. If Al Kazayis Ben Ameis Megaleach, Al Ameis Kuloi Koshkein, so what did the Mishnah have to say, both Al Kazayis Ben Ameis and Al Ameis? Then we're talking about a case where it doesn't have Gidim. Alma, So what do we see? And this is why Tosfos explained it at the beginning of the Pirik. It's a Tumah Kadam, which means that first you have an Issa Tumah, because the child or the fetus, when it's formed, is all soft. And as soon as it's soft, it's a non-kosher fetus, so the Issa Tumah comes. Only, said Tosfos later, does the Gid start to form. So they don't come at the same time. So the entire explanation of Yehuda we've been giving is that the two Asurim come at the same time. But that isn't factually correct. First it's Tumah, first it's Basar, and only afterwards the Gidim form. Answers the Gemara, correct. Afkav the Issa Tumah Kadam, even though indeed the Issa Tumah comes first, Osig Issa Gid Chayala. This Gid can come on it. Why? Shekeni Surah Noi B'Bnei Noi. Even though we hold Ein Issa Chalal Isser, if the second Isser is more chomer than the first Isser, then it's an exception to the rule. And that's this case. Because a non-kosher animal, only we may not eat, but Goyim may eat. Gila Nasha, no one's allowed to eat. And Rabbi Yehuda is going to hold, that makes it more chomer, and that's why the rule of Ein Issa Chalal Isser doesn't apply. Now, says the Gemara, our Mishnah is very understandable. Deikonami, because our Mishnah said what seemed to be two very different subjects. First, Rabbi Yehuda said that by a non-kosher animal there's an Issa Gid. And then Rabbi Yehuda started speaking about the Issa to Goyim. What's the connection? To teach us that Gid Anosha is more serious than non-kosher. Because non-kosher meat is only also to Jews. Gid Anosha is even also to non-Jews. So that's why it's Issa Chomer. And by Issa Chama, we don't say Ein Issa Chalal Isser, and that's why both Yisurim can be Chal, and if somebody eats the Gid Anosha of a non-kosher animal, he did two Averis, two Malkus.